My wife Marianne and I are in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, on vacation. We're here for a couple of days before the beginning of a cruise. And I decided, since I noticed a few different things, to talk about looking for Christ and God in Amsterdam. When we first arrived, having flown from Florida to Detroit and then Detroit to Amsterdam, the signage in the Schiphol International Airport was interesting to me. The people depicted in the various signages talking about one thing or another, there were Hispanic-looking people, there were Asian-looking people, there were African-looking people, in various ads talking about helpfulness and keeping the country clean and serving travelers and tourists. And it was interesting to me that it was so multicultural, so multiracial, that high level of acceptance to include people in what is really a white, that is, Caucasian country. I thought that high level of acceptance really represented something very valuable and very good. Historically, we knew very little in the United States about the Dutch. However, the Dutch were great sailors and great merchants, and in fact, touched a lot of different places on the planet, including, of course, New York. My wife and I both grew up in New York, and New York history talked about the colony, the Dutch colony of New York, and all the words that were associated with it. As we were driving around yesterday on a tour, I noticed words like Amsterdam, obviously, and Harlem, and other things that also were common words and still are today in New York City. When I lived in New York City for about almost a dozen years, I noticed I was two blocks off of Amsterdam Avenue, and uptown from me was Harlem, and so on. And New York was essentially a Dutch colony. Peter Stuyvesant and Stuyvesant Town in New York City were indications of the Dutch influence. So being great sailors and great merchants, you would say that the Dutch had connected many parts of the globe by traveling to and trading with these various parts. Now, I presume we could get into a discussion about how enlightened or unenlightened the Dutch were in their policies. I don't know enough about it to engage in that aspect. However, I do know that in our hemisphere, Aruba and Curacao and other places, the Dutch Antilles and so on, still bear tremendous Dutch loyalties and characteristics from their previous connections. Amsterdam and the country as a whole, the Netherlands, are known for their policies regarding marijuana and the use of it, as well as the treatment of people addicted to hard drugs, which are not legal. However, they are a reality in humankind, and the legalization of prostitution, which is also common in other countries as well, and the very low crime rate that is experienced in the Netherlands. It seems pretty obvious if I were to say laws and crime go hand in hand. So you'd recognize that if I have a law that says you must do X or you must not do Y, soon as somebody is at variance with that law, I could then say, oh, they just committed a crime. And so if I can create a law, I can create a crime simply by looking at people either behaving or not behaving in accordance with that law that I've recently created. In the United States, there are a couple of 100,000 people, over 200,000 people, that are in prison for non-violent drug-related offenses. And those offenses or crimes are related to the use of marijuana, possession of marijuana, or the selling of marijuana in a lot of cases. The cost to the taxpayer of having a person in prison for one of these nonviolent crimes is anywhere from $45,000 to $50,000 or more per year. It costs the taxpayer $45,000 or more per year to keep a person who smoked or used or sold marijuana in a prison. Not only does it cost us that much to put a person or keep a person in prison, I'm not talking about what it costs actually to get them there with the cost of police, laws, jury, judges, temporary jails, and so on and so forth. I'm also not talking about the taxes that these people, now that they're in jail, are not paying by working. Now, for some of them, buying and selling marijuana may have been the only jobs that they were involved in. For many of them, they are normal, law-abiding citizens working in jobs, producing revenue for themselves or their companies, and paying taxes that benefit society as a whole. When those people are taken out of the economic mainstream, stuck in a prison, they are not earning money or paying taxes. They are not contributing. They are a net loss to society as a whole, with the exception of the people that are benefiting from putting them in jail in the first place. That is the person who owns the jail, who administers the jail, who staffs the jail. There's a lot of money in that, so they benefit. But society as a whole doesn't. In Amsterdam, there is no such policy of arresting people for the use, the possession of marijuana. The sale of marijuana is legally controlled. That is, people have licenses, and the establishments that sell marijuana are called coffee shops. Coffee shops are, just like it sounds, coffee shops that sell other beverages, non-alcoholic beverages, as well as marijuana. So people can buy up to 5 grams of marijuana at a time and can be in possession of up to 5 grams of marijuana at a time. So 5 grams in the United States may get you years in prison. In Amsterdam, it gets tax money to the country. I think in terms of the inclusivity that I saw on the signage when I arrived at the airport yesterday, and also on the streets, when you look at people and you can see so many sizes, shapes, colors, nationalities walking and talking on the streets and in the stores, it's pretty amazing. It's very interesting and very appealing to me personally, having grown up in New York. Differences in culture is an accepted and normal and desirable thing. Variety is normal and desirable. Even in the days when I lived in Manhattan, to be able to walk on Broadway, either up or down, depending on which direction I was going on a particular day, from my apartment, to be able to hear multiple languages on the street, people speaking Chinese and Arabic and languages I was totally unable to determine what they were. It just is so interesting to know that we vary in so many different ways, but in other ways we're so much alike. That's really appealing to me. One of the aspects of Jesus Christ that was so appealing to me as well growing up was the idea that Jesus was for inclusion, not exclusion. Now, clearly, that was against the norm of his times, and maybe even against the norms of today, in that he accepted and sat and ate with and hung around with people who were looked down upon by other people in that community. So the idea that he would be with tax collectors and prostitutes and other people, much to the chagrin of the Pharisees or other people who were marketing separation. Jesus was marketing connection. The idea that one group is marketing separation, us versus them, us being better, them being worse, or by connection, that is, seeing and accepting the similarities between people and accepting that there are variations, but at the core, we are alike one another. Those two fundamental views are at play here. Separation will keep me safe, or connection will keep me safe. Jesus would have said, connection will keep me safe. Pharisees would have said, separation will keep me safe. The Romans would have said, separation will keep me safe. And that's gone on for centuries. Ghettos are an indication of the separation that so many people believe in. In certain countries, there were Jewish ghettos. In other countries, gypsy ghettos. And now, inner cities in many places in the United States certainly are either African-American ghettos or Hispanic ghettos. I suppose there are Asian ghettos too, but I'm unfamiliar with them. If you look at news, you read the media, you look at what is being hyped and marketed, political advertisement included, and you could see that even around the coffee machine or the water coolers, as well as on this global scale of media, separation is being hyped and marketed. Today in Amsterdam is a gay pride boat parade. Apparently it's an amazing event as boats of all types are sailed through the canals of the city. Now, these demonstrations, I've seen parades of various sorts on streets, and I've seen Christmas parades in San Diego and in Naples, Florida, that had boats decorated in Christmas lights, but I've not seen a gay pride parade on boats. So it should be interesting when we leave the hotel room this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to seeing it, just because it's an experience that I'm unfamiliar with. What would Jesus do in a city having a gay pride parade? Would he be offended by people who are promoting their own self-acceptance? When people self-accept, aren't they closer to God than when they are at war with themselves? I think that is a fundamental question. Would God repeat the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah because Amsterdam doesn't criminalize drugs and sexuality the way other countries do? I wonder. Is this a city that deserves destruction or approval as a leader in man's relationship with man? I find it odd when I see stuff promoting America as the land of the free. Now, other people don't promote that. Americans promote that. But one of the realities that seems to be overlooked is that in America, we have the highest percentage of our population locked away in prisons. So, we have the highest percentage of unfree in our population than anybody else, including Red China and North Korea and Libya. That's odd. That's weird. Back to Amsterdam. Would God today be accepting of these people who are accepting and loving toward one another? I wonder if God would be more accepting of a heterosexual man who beats his wife than he would be, say, of two homosexual men or two homosexual women who don't. How would he value those? Who is closer to him? Is God in favor of separation or of connection? In Amsterdam, prostitution is legal. The same is true in my experience of Panama, where I lived when I was stationed in the Army, and Costa Rica, where I vacationed multiple times, and my wife and I own property. Prostitution is legal, government-controlled, inspected, safety-assured sort of things, designed to minimize the transmission of disease and, specifically, abuse. Just because something is legal doesn't make it good. No, I'm not saying that the idea that marijuana is legal makes marijuana a good idea. I'm not saying that prostitution being legal makes prostitution a good idea. I think, really, there are better uses of human talent than prostitution. But since prostitution is an age-old human activity, it is not likely we're going to legislate it away anytime soon. Not only does making things legal not make them good, it's not the promotion thereof. Making things illegal doesn't make them bad. It only makes them against a man-made law. Why are laws made? Who wrote the laws? This is a real interesting area. If you look at the laws against marijuana in the United States, and if you can't already tell, let me be real clear. I'm a believer in legalization, or at least a decriminalization of marijuana. I'm in favor of government control and taxation of that particular industry. That product ought to be taxed. It should be taken out of the hands of the criminals, and the benefit accrue to society, not to criminals. So back to laws. Why are they? Who made them? Who wrote them? Religious fundamentalists would say that God wrote the laws, the main laws, the capital L kind of laws. And he wrote them by using the Bible, that's how, the Old or New Testament, or both, depending on your points of view. The Quran is another holy book, inspired by and directed and verbalized, I guess, by God, written by the hand of man, like all things, but spoken by the voice of God, and the same must be true of the Torah. That's how God made his laws known to man. Other religions would reference other writings as to the laws of God. Doesn't it seem, again, odd that the U.S., with its extremely well-defined Constitution and Bill of Rights, would need so many laws, lawyers, judges and juries, and courts at various levels to decide who is on what side of which law? While information written, parsed, interpreted, translated, edited, rewritten, modernized, and popularized wouldn't cause questions about its authenticity of it being the direct word of God, word for word. If we can't look at the Constitution and be very clearly, oh, well, this person's right and I'm wrong, or they're wrong and I'm right, and so let's get on with life, we can't do that without all these other processes in between. Yet, the derivation of written laws in these holy books has been so influenced by the hands of man. And if we think that the hands of man didn't influence it, or the self-serving of man didn't influence it, but in fact God was able to make his word known and not influenceable by man, I don't think we're paying attention to what's going on the planet. As a simple example, when you start to look at the history of marijuana in the United States, it's very interesting to note that marijuana was legal for a long time. It's basically a plant that grows in the soil, dried, and in one form or another is ingested, smoking or eating, or I suppose even as a beverage. So, it was legal for a real long time, but then somebody came along and started to promote hemp, which is in the same family as marijuana, as a source of paper that could be, or pulp that could be used in the production of paper. So hemp, instead of trees, could be used to produce paper for the newspaper industry, the magazine industry. That was going to be a problem for William Randolph Hearst. William Randolph Hearst was a very powerful figure in the newspaper industry. He was also a very rich man, and a lot of his investment was in timberland. A lot of his wealth was hinging upon the fact that his wood was going to be converted into pulp and converted into newspaper. And now all of a sudden there was a competitive product to timber called hemp. William Randolph Hearst was not about to let that happen. He wanted to demonize hemp in all of its form, and he succeeded. He succeeded even till this day that hemp, used for the creation of rope and cosmetics and lotions and even food, has been against the law in the United States for some 50 or more years, simply because of his promotion, his demonization of hemp and all aspects of it, to include marijuana. He used racial prejudice as a way to make it illegal. He demonized immigrants, specifically Mexicans, for using marijuana, and promoted the idea that not only should we expel Mexicans back south across the border to Mexico as being a real problem, but we also needed to make marijuana illegal because that was part of the Mexican problem. Not only were Mexicans coming across the border and stealing jobs from white Americans, but they were smoking marijuana and doing all kinds of weird things as a result of this hemp-based drug. Hearst succeeded. With the help of politicians, he was able to buy influence. And here we are today, putting hundreds of thousands of people into jail because some man could influence society to protect his wealth. Amazing, isn't it? Niels, our Dutch taxi driver yesterday, talked about the politics of Amsterdam. He spoke of the low crime rate as a result of the drug policies, and that was interesting to us. When things such as drugs and prostitution are illegal, he told us, and we already knew this to be true from our own history in the United States. He said, when these things are illegal, the management of those industries falls into the hands of criminals. When they are legalized, the management of them is in the hands of the government. Government can protect the consumer and the producers, can collect taxes, can make sure health issues are and standards are maintained, and so, and literally that taxation and that control prevents crime, prevents politicians from being bought by the money produced by that criminal activity, and that money is used to improve the overall operations and functions of the country. Criminals lose two very important business ventures: drugs and prostitution. In the United States, we have the experience of the Prohibition to draw upon. We know that from our history, that eliminating alcohol, despite its terrible dangers to society, no question about it, alcohol is not something that you want to be promoting to your children or even to yourself. But since it's been around since the beginning of time, the chances of making it disappear, not going to happen. It's never been able to happen. When alcohol was made illegal during the Prohibition, the industry, that is, alcohol production and distribution, that industry was handed over to the criminals. The cost to society skyrocketed. The benefits to society was going to be less problems because of alcohol consumption. And momentarily that may have occurred, but then all kinds of problems accrued to society. Increased violence in the marketplace, the need for more police to protect citizens from the criminals who were battling other criminals, and the police for control over the marketplace that no longer was legal. There was no taxes collected from the production and sales of these products, so no governmental institution, no society functioning was improved as a result of that loss of taxation. Overall, the taxpaying society was tremendously disadvantaged. While prostitution has been labeled as the oldest profession, this is not true. If we use the Bible as our source, we could see that the serpent was the first politician, and Cain was the first murderer, and Abel was the first victim of the first murderer. That, to me, makes politics and murder as the two oldest professions. In the United States, heroin addicts are considered responsible for a lot of crime. And you can understand how this has to happen. An addict is basically going to do whatever they have to do in order to have money enough to buy their next amount, their next fix of heroin. And in order to do that, they could either get a well-paying job or they need to steal stuff. And so most of the crime attributed to heroin addicts is theft-related. So they steal goods that they then sell one way or another through other people in order to acquire money so they can go and buy heroin from the criminal heroin supplier. It's different in Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, heroin addicts can go to government-controlled facilities and, under supervision, inject themselves with heroin with clean needles. On the one hand, you say that we're promoting that sort of behavior, but in reality, that behavior is uncontrollable in our societies. Now it's going to happen in a safe, controlled environment where there is no potential for the spread of disease, there's no criminal activity, there's no stealing that needs to occur as a forerunner to this acquisition of heroin. It's a whole different experience. There's no crime, there's no spread of disease, and the paying for the effects of that spread disease. There's no increase in the police forces to catch and criminalize these people. There are no judges in prisons needed because of the way Amsterdam handles this societal problem. There are no drug cartels in Amsterdam controlling marijuana. Contrast this to the Mexican-Texas border, the Mexico-Arizona border, and the Mexico-California borders. We have created the power of those cartels through the creation of our laws. By turning these industries over through our laws to criminals, we have empowered them to do what they do: murder one another, murder the police, buy politicians, buy police corruption, and kill innocent citizens. No place is perfect, and that includes Amsterdam. But I do appreciate the multicultural, the multi-ethnic, the multi-language, and the very high level of acceptance of one human being for another that I see every place I look in Amsterdam. Now, it may be over the top to say that people here project to other people who live and visit a high level of acceptance because they see the God in the other person. That may be over the top. Maybe it's closer to the truth that in Amsterdam, people can see more clearly the God in themselves. It's easier to self-accept because the demonization that goes on in other cultures is not happening here to that level. In Amsterdam, it seems clear to me that separation and demonization of others is not the fear-based priority that I've seen it be in other places. I think God and Christ are both present here in the way people respect and appreciate not only the similarities in themselves, but the differences in themselves and in others. Maybe Amsterdam can teach us a lot about how to get along with one another. I would like to end this service with a prayer. Father God, Mother God, Christ, the Creator in connection to all that is, thank you for all of our blessings. Thank you for demonstrating your beauty and your love in so many different places. Thank you for helping us understand the value of connection over separation. Thank you for showing us, helping us to know, making us aware. The ultimate connection, I would think, has got to be where substances like marijuana and heroin are no longer used because people recognize there's a more powerful, empowering, lovely connection that is direct to you rather than substances. But in the meantime, thank you for helping us become aware that it is more valuable to connect to one another than it is to separate from one another. Thank you. It is done. Amen.